My guest is Anna Cavazzini. Anna Cavazzini is a member of the European Parliament from the German Green Party and chairs the Influential Committee on the Internal Market and Consumer Protection. And this is the lead committee amongst many other dossiers for the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act. Welcome to the podcast, Anna.
Hey, I'm good that you have me.
Right. Okay, let's get cracking. So just a week ago, we're recording this on the 20th of November, just a week ago in the European Parliament, there was quite a controversial vote on sustainability reporting and due diligence and the requirements for companies in, to show due diligence in their supply chains. And it was seen as controversial because this so-called alliance coalition of groups around the center of the parliament were discarded by the EPP. And then the EPP, the European People's Party on the center right, chose to team up with groups on the right. May I ask you as a starting point, has that left such a big mark on the European Parliament now? Has the atmosphere, even in the few days since that controversial vote, changed inside the European Parliament, as far as you can see?
Yes, Paul, I would say the atmosphere in the European Parliament changed completely because it was kind of a... It never happened before that the EPP willingly relied on the extreme right to change the legislation. Before, we always tried to have this cordon sanitaire, this so-called firewall, to make sure that we build majorities in the center, majorities with the pro-European and pro-democratic forces. And in this parliament, with changing majorities, the EPP, the European Conservatives, have in fact two options. They have a majority with the center, but they also have a majority with the far right. And they're using it more and more to blackmail the more progressive groups, basically saying, yeah, if you don't do exactly what I want, then I have the other option and vote with the far right. And they did it already in the past months on like smaller things, but now it was the first time they really changed a big, important landmark legislation with the far right.
Right. Do you, the Green Group, count yourself as part of this so-called cordon sanitaire? I mean, only a year or so, 15 months since the vote on Ursula von der Leyen took place in the parliament. And there were the groups around the center, EPP, Socialists, and the Renew, so-called Liberal Group. Does the Green Group count itself part of that coalition as well?
Yeah, we are part of the groups in the European Parliament who voted for Ursula von der Leyen. And this kind of course, very carefully deliberated and carefully also negotiated with Ursula von der Leyen, because she approached us and basically also, you know, gave us some political demands that we have, for example, not completely backtracking the Green Deal, continuing with the climate agenda, and so on and so on. And she was very clear in her speech when she got elected that she wants to work with the progressive center and not with the far right. And these were two reasons why we voted for her. I think the problem is, at the end, not so much with her. I think the problem is more with her political group in the European Parliament. As I said, they smell that they can basically now also push through more of their content with the extreme right. And that's why I think there's a lot of temptation within her political group to go closer to the far right instead of working with the center. But yeah, the Greens clearly supported Ursula von der Leyen.
So without putting words in your mouth, are you saying since that vote last Thursday that there's the new majority, which is a center right and extreme right, and any groups to the left of that group, including your group, no longer forms part of that majority for any kind of future vote?
I mean, in general, the EPP, if you ask them, they would still deny that there's any official coalition with the far right. But again, it's an option and they're using it to also push things through to blackmail us. We, at the same day when we voted the due diligence law, we had another vote on the 2040 climate target. And there, interestingly, again, the EPP voted with us and we found an agreement with them where... like a typical compromise everyone was a little bit unhappy with. It was too weak for us. It was probably too strong for them, but we managed to have a compromise. So, and that happened at the same days. So it means that for the future, yes, trust has been broken, but I would not say that the coalition has completely broken. I hope that probably also for the EPP, this vote was a lesson that they don't want to repeat it, that they try in future upcoming important legislations to go back again to the so-called von der Leyen coalition to ask social democrats and liberals and to continue working with us. But yeah, again, trust has been shattered. So let's see how this goes.
Right. Well, you've used the word blackmail a couple of times. I suppose from the EPP's point of view, Manfred Weber, the head of that group, they have the best of both worlds, right? They can turn toward the right, the extreme right, to get a vote through, like on due diligence reporting. And then when it comes, you say, on the targets, then they can just turn to you. It's very difficult for you and the socialists and the Renew group to say no, because you want to get things through, right? So it's quite a difficult situation you find yourselves in, no?
I think you describe our dilemma perfectly. The EPP, for example, definitely needs our vote on the budget, as an example. The
Right.
multi-annual budget is about to be voted. And of course, the far right, anti-European groups, they don't want a strong European budget. But the EPP wants it and they need it for us. And but of course, we could also say we defect this vote now. We also play obstructive but then we are in a dilemma that, of course, we also want the budget. We don't want to completely mess up the European Union. So for us, it's a little bit more difficult to exercise leverage.
And when you say trust has been broken, how? If I were Manfred Weber now talking to you, what would you say to me about how to try and rebuild the trust that has been shattered, to use your words?
Yeah, I expect the EPP to not blink all the time to the extreme right, but
Okay.
in all the upcoming different important pieces of legislation, sit with us at one table, negotiate with us, and also make compromises with us. And compromises does not mean the pure EPP line
Yeah.
will at the end prevail just because, yeah, they're the biggest group.
Right. And I'm right in saying this was a secret vote, which is quite unusual, no, for this kind of vote. Normally there are roll call votes in the plenary. You can see exactly who how people voted. So it was that part of a key element of that their tactics to in a sense, what's been reported as some of the groups to from the cordon sanitaire were keen to vote for this package, but didn't want to be seen to be voting for this package. Is that a fair account?
The secret vote happened 3 weeks ago. So last week
Right.
it was not a secret vote, but
Yeah.
the secret vote was actually requested by the far right. And I think they had this calculation or plan, and they had that, yeah, even basically some of the EPP might not follow the line. They wanted to create chaos with the secret vote. And that's why they put it forward. We had also actually discussion afterwards. Saying probably in the rules of procedure in the European Parliament, it should be made harder to ask for a secret vote because it's not very transparent also to our voters. So in general, the
Yeah.
European Parliament needs to be a very transparent institution, and secret votes should really be the exception in the future.
Right. Well, I should maybe zoom out a bit now, not just focus on this particular vote. This is obviously part of the strategy now, if you like, of the von der Leyen second mandate in the Commission to, in effect, try as much as she can follow the recommendations of the famous Draghi report on competitiveness now. And I mean, again, the dilemma for groups like yours and others to the left or center is that is now very much, maybe not the zeitgeist, but is now everybody's talking about competitiveness and need to simplify regulation. You know, the argument's much better than I do. So again, another dilemma for you and your colleagues to the maybe more towards the center is that that is now the prevailing wisdom, isn't it? So much unlike the first mandate of von der Leyen, but now we're saying we're the Commission and the EU more broadly is doing too much. It's stifling innovation. We have to be more sensitive to the needs of business to create growth and make Europe more competitive. So again, since you chair this very influential committee, how do you factor that in as a member of your Green Group?
I think for us as Greens, it is really important to always stress that climate change and green rules are a big driver of increased competitiveness,
Right.
because climate protection, climate policies is one of the big innovation or modernization factors also for the economy. And for example, when I look at sectors that are really growing at the moment in Germany, it's like net zero technology sectors. With a huge potential. So if you see competition in a way, or competitiveness in a way that we want to modernize our society, our economy, and become more innovative and have faster, implementation of new inventions or patents or whatsoever, and have more investment in innovative sectors, I think we are all fine. If competitive means, and this is how part of the right wing actually understands it, just scrapping all the rules we did.
Yeah.
Then we have a huge problem. But if I read the Draghi report correctly, that you also quoted, that you also mentioned, he doesn't say, okay, scrap all the climate rules. He says a lot of different things. For example, concentrating also on sectors where we have still a competitive edge in Europe, or investing a lot of money that we need to keep the economy growing and modernizing. But he also doesn't say scrap all the climate rules. But this is what some of the far right is cherry-picking now from his report, and this makes me also a little bit angry. I don't think that the current economic struggle we're having in Europe, especially in the German economy, comes from climate protection rules. I think it comes from high energy prices due to the Ukraine war and the horrible aggression by Russia. It comes from Trump's tariffs. It comes from the second China shock, but it doesn't come from the European due diligence law that is not even in place. Sorry, no one can fool me on that.
Okay. Well, as you know, Mario Draghi presented his famous report in September of last year. And to my knowledge, he's been to the European Parliament at least twice, maybe three times since then to present the report and to check on kind of progress to date. Do you agree with me? He seems increasingly exasperated. And of course, he has the Parliament as a public, you know, public forum with which to express these views. And he's obviously criticizing the whole of the EU, not just MEPs. But do you think that his exasperation is justified, or is he exaggerating to a certain extent?
I mean, I also talked to him when he prepared the report, and I, of course, saw him when he presented the report in the parliament. And my feeling was always like his main message is now we need a European moment. You know, we need a
Yeah.
new Europeanization push. And of course, this at the moment we don't have because of all the governments turning more right wing, turning more national, everyone talking about the single market, but no one. I also did not see yet my German government, like the German chancellor, putting any initiative forward on really strengthening the single market, which mean Europeanization in the economy, which would really help us, and which also Draghi proposed. So I have the feeling that Draghi's impatience comes also very much from that this whole big Europeanization push is actually at the moment not happening. And I think the ones to blame are usually the member states who, talk a lot about the single market and so on, but then never act.
Right. Well, given your key role on a key committee, probably the most important committee in the context of the competitiveness agenda more broadly, how do you see your role then in promoting? Maybe not, it's not your job to promote the Draghi report. You have your own independent status, but there is the broader debate, as I said, about competitiveness and growth. So how do you see your role in that context?
I mean, I also look at the Draghi report, but also at the letter report on the future
Right.
of the single market. And I think there is some very interesting proposals. Some are like sectoral. So letter looks at different sectors where there's still much more potential to Europeanize and complete our single market, energy or telecoms, defense, where we would all benefit from a closer European cooperation. And then there's also horizontal issues. And I think there, I quite like the single market strategy by the Commission that they published at the beginning of the year because it gets very concrete. And actually, I like this because everyone is talking about the barriers in the single market and everyone understands something completely different under it. And then the Commission made really concrete proposals on what are actually the very concrete hurdles. And often, I have to say, it's member states adding up weird bureaucratic requirements for companies that want to operate from other country in their markets. And I think those I'm trying to promote those ideas in my committee that make really that bring some change that are very concrete that will help the companies instead of pushing this whole deregulation agenda.
Right. Well, on deregulation, as you know, again, this is what this strange word omnibus is, the strategy of the European Commission to take sectors one by one, if you like, or cluster the sectors and see to what extent the rules governing those sectors from the EU level can be what they would call simplified, I suppose, a bit of a euphemism. I imagine that it's not something that you automatically have sympathy with because it suggests that deregulation is maybe going too far. Is that what you think?
Yeah, and it is very much not facts-based, very hasty. For example, the first omnibus, that was the vote we talked about, the due diligence law was really done without any impact assessment, without any empirical evidence. And I think just very politically motivated. You know, when I talk to people who are longer here in the parliament and in the commission, like for 20, 30 years, they say, yeah, in the past, omnibuses were used to really only align very technical things. And now they're used to really open up entire pieces of legislation that not even has not even entered into force. The Commission just yesterday proposed Another omnibus in the AI Act, our really prime European law on making sure that artificial intelligence is being used for the purpose of human beings, respecting civil rights and so on, consumer protection rights. And because of all the lobby, for example, also from huge American tech companies or from the Trump administration, the commission is now giving in and open this law before it's even properly in place. And this is for me the contrary of good lawmaking. For me, it's like very highly politically motivated chaos lawmaking, where also a lot of companies are asking, okay, there's a lot of uncertainty. I plan this now, and now you open the law again. So what actually is happening? So I have a lot of companies who are complaining with me as well.
Well, let's have a moment then about Trump and the influence of the tech lobbies. How, in your judgment, how effective, how influential are they now in the current climate? How much impact are they having?
A lot of impact because, I mean, first of all, there was just a new study being published that the tech sector is the one with the biggest lobby expenses here in Brussels. So it's also just very, very concrete, the influence and the noise they're making. And of course, when it comes to American tech companies, they're at the moment very much connected to the Trump administration. So it's a very dangerous mixture, melange between also Trump's tariff policy and his blackmailing and the interests of the American tech companies that are very close to the Republicans right now. And there is in the European Union this fear or this notion, oh, we are running behind. So we also need to create our own tech ecosystem, which is of course true. But the false analogy is now, okay, we need to get rid of our legislation in order to get a functioning European tech sector. And I think the opposite is true. We need clear rules. But of course also other things like, for example, public procurement being used for European tech companies, a better competition with the DMA to making sure that these huge tech monopolies are being broken up and also smaller European companies can, evolve. So I think we need better regulation for creating a European tech ecosystem instead of less regulation or no regulation.
Do you have any sense that some of this influence, this impact of the tech sector, and again in very broad terms, supported out to what extent by the Trump administration, is maybe going to go too far, and there'll be what they used to call a tech backlash?
You mean if it's going too far
Be
for
counter,
them?
yeah, counterproductive that they will,
For them, counterproductive? I don't know, but what we can see, of course, but there's much more experts than me on the topic that there is now a lot of like over investment in AI and kind of even a bubble being built up. Because everyone is like talking about, okay, we need more AI, but no one really knows what is exactly the business case and can we really use that, what kind of AI models we need. So in that sense, I see at the moment an over narrative, an over push of the tech industry that could backfire for them also because they put a lot of money now in the AI models. And at the moment, it's not so clear if this bubble will not burst at some point in the future.
We're coming to almost to the end already. These things go so quickly. I've got a couple more questions left for you, Anna. One is many people, going back to the European Commissioner, Ursula von der Leyen, say that she is too powerful. She's not inclusive enough. She's too presidential, even though that's in her job title, president, and that she doesn't consult enough with colleagues, both inside the Commission, never mind the member states, although you in the European Parliament and other stakeholders. Do you have any sympathy for that argument?
Yes, I would say that she concentrates a lot of power in her hands, and you can also see, how she structured the commission collage now is also a way of completely confusing and blending different responsibilities in order to also make sure that at the end it's always her deciding. And of course, yeah, in a way you need, as the president of the European Commission, have the oversight and give the direction. But on the other hand, yeah, I hear that also sometimes she's not coordinating important initiatives with her own commissioners, which is, of course, a problem. For me, a bigger problem right now, to be very honest, is that I have the feeling that the EPP is also completely politicizing and taking over the commission. So they're much more coordinating the EPP commissioners and also with the EPP government. And for me, this is also a little bit new because I had the feeling before it was always like, okay, you become a European commissioner, you leave a little bit behind your party book. Because you're working for the true European cause. And I have the feeling I've never before seen such a politicized commission with so much basically EPP influence, and this I find much more worrisome actually.
Right. Well, a final question then is, and it's about the Green Movement and the political manifestation of the Green Movement with the Green Parties. And without a doubt, the Green Party in your country, Germany, has been by far the most successful, electorally speaking, Green Party across Europe. You've been in coalition government in and out, like other parties, obviously, but you have been successful. And up to a point, even though you had fewer seats at the European elections last year, you're still a sizable grouping within the European Parliament. As I said in the introduction, you chair that were probably the most influential committee in the European Parliament. And the Green Party is quite good, in my estimation, at sort of punching above its weight. You choose dossiers like in previous parliaments, like GDPR, General Data Privacy Regulation, or even taxation, where the key people are your colleagues from the Green Party, also from Germany as well. But my question to finish off, Anna, is about the future of the Green parties more broadly. How do you position yourselves? Obviously, the green element is core to your existence and to your raison d'être. But obviously, you need to not just focus exclusively on green issues, important as those are. So, in strategic terms, how does the Green Movement and Green parties in particular, maybe want to use your country as a specific example, work out how to position itself beyond the core green agenda in the 21st century?
I would say the Greens have never been parties or a party that only concentrated strictly on environment or climate issues, especially also in my party in Germany. We have really different roots, you know, also civil rights movement, women rights movement, democracy movement. And we also started to make policies, make politics differently than other parties, more transparent, more inclusive. And all of these topics are still there. So we are broad. We are not only working on environment. But yeah, in general, I would say internationally, the progressive parties, the progressive forces are more in the defense right now, and the authoritarian regimes are getting stronger. So I think all of us have to think about how we can talk again to more people who somehow turned their back towards us. For us, I would say the main issue at the moment in the German Greens is that we want to explain better and make sure that all our climate and environment policies really are compatible with social considerations, and that people don't fear that because we do climate change that they're gonna lose out. And this is probably one thought that I'm having in the very little time that stays. But of course, we could do another complete podcast on this question.
Well, that's a good invitation to come back to the conversation next time. We have to leave it there. Anna Cabezzini, thank you very much for your time.
Was a pleasure. Thank you.